All right, welcome in, everybody. Kevin Kincaid and Dave Zeitlin. It's Always Soccer in Philadelphia. Glad to be with you from the studio again, because the last one of these I did from my truck. So
I think we should go out to your truck just to do it again, second straight.
The two of us should just go sit in my truck. It's good to be with you again, Dave.
Yeah.
I'm sorry I did the last
one. It was pretty good. I listened to it in my car. It was good sound quality. Were you just driving and just like had the phone on speakers? How are you doing it?
Yeah. So what I did was I had my recorder, like my professional recorder, and I just, because I had my bag to the side of me, I just picked it up. I'm like, well, why don't I just drive with one hand and just talk into this thing with the other hand?
That seems unsafe, but well, in the podcast world, you got to do it.
I tell you,
you got to live dangerously.
There really wasn't a lot of traffic on route. 15 north out of Williamsport, Pennsylvania, going into New York, so I felt like it was all right at that time. But the quality, I guess, was okay. I was so bored on the drive up that I just figured, I'm like, why don't I just grab the microphone and do like a little, like, you know, seven or eight minute thing. Yeah, I tried to. Funny thing was, I didn't have, like, I couldn't turn my laptop on in the car because the battery's been dead on that thing forever, and now the Wi-Fi is dead on it too. So I went to I stopped at like a Burger King in the middle of New York, and I tried to use the Whopper Wi-Fi to upload the podcast, but the Whopper Wi-Fi was disappointing.
And so what did they say for you going through customs into Canada? You're like, are you some kind of soccer podcaster in a truck?
They asked me if
I'm
I was
not sure
a player.
If we can let you in.
They asked me if I was playing in the game. I'm like, no, I would have had a better. I would have had different travel accommodations if I was playing in the game. I wouldn't be
you
in
just
a
said yes.
2004 Ford Ranger, but no, they were good. You know, it's funny. It's actually a really, really nice drive, right? It's only 8 hours. I think everybody thinks it's further than it is because you're going to another country. But no, they just said, hey, what are you doing up here? Hey, I'm a journalist covering a game. Oh, okay. Are you you're not a player? No, I'm just writing about it. So I don't remember.
That's a compliment. Canadians think you look more like a player than a journalist.
I'll take it. But you know what? I got to say, it was a lot easier getting into Canada than it did. Was getting back into my own country. Yeah, so I don't know. That's you could go a bunch of different directions with that one, but we won't. We'll just say it was a successful trip. You know, I was only there for 12 hours. It went how I thought it would be. You know, the Union came out and they started well, and then just gave up a you know, another crappy goal where they really shot themselves in the foot, you know, and then it was 1-0. They fought back to get it to 2-1. I mean, if I had told you going into this that it was going to be a one goal game in the 80th minute, you would have said.
Yeah, I thought they played pretty well. You know, once it got to a 2-0, just guys were saying on Twitter, like, this thing's over. And I sort of agreed that it would be hard for them to win. But at the same time, like, I like upsets. I'm a big March Madness guy. I'm like, let's not count them out yet. Like, it's a playoffs. Weird things can happen. Like, they're only down 2 goals, and then they're down 1 goal. I'm like, this is fun. They're in the playoffs. They're trying to get the upset. But as you said, in the end, Toronto is the better team. They're my pick to win the whole thing. So it kind of went
the quality came to the top again. And, you know, they get it back to 2-1, and then they take off Keegan Rosenberry, and they go 3 at the back. You know, just to get another forward on the field. I don't see anything wrong with the way they
finally
approached
taking
it
out Keegan after the whole year.
And I know that people. I know that some people were griping about taking out Keegan as opposed to taking out like Ken Tribbett, for instance. But you know, in those situations, I don't know. You could have left Keegan back there with Richie Marquez and Fabinho and just try to have Marquez be the big guy. But I think Jim just wanted to leave his two center backs on there and take a fullback off to get the other attacker on. I don't think that's the reason they lost the game. Again, it was another individual mistake from Ken Tribbett, but I don't know if it would have been any different any other substitution that they made. But
how do you think Ken Tribbett's offseason is going to be? A little lonely?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I feel for Ken because he – you know, again, he's had some strong games and some strong moments, and but those are the things that kill you, you know.
Yeah, we've talked about him versus Toronto. I mean, it seems like every game it's such a hard matchup for him. And you know, it was a cool story, Ken Tribbett. Like, I talked to him before the year, like a year before signing with the Union. He was back home in Colorado. He wasn't playing professionally.
Yeah,
he was like a ref. He was living with his parents, and then he got this chance to start. And can you say it was too soon? Perhaps it was a nice story.
But, right, because he wasn't supposed to.
Yeah, like when you see him versus guys like Giovinco and Altidore, it's such a big talent gap, and that's hard to overcome.
Two thoughts on that. Number one, the goals that he was culpable for in the playoff game, I don't think they really had anything to do with the talent of who he was playing. I think he made a mistake on the first one, just shanked clearance, and then on the second one, he just gets a clearance wrong too. So you know, yeah, in the first couple times he played against Josie and Javinko, the gulf in class was there. This time I think he just made the mistakes. But when we went back to the beginning of the year and we were sitting there outside of the bubble at Penn, right, on the very first day.
Yeah, we're going back there, like, again in, like, 2 months probably.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the off-season's, what, like, 8 weeks long?
I think it starts Saturday.
Oh, God, yeah. Ken Tribbett was one of those guys who he was there. And when, you know, always the first day, you're always trying to identify, like, the trialists and the people you don't expect to be there. Who did they invite or whatever? And he showed up. And I was like, oh, Ken Tribbett's a trialist, you know? If you told me that he'd be starting in the playoff game.
No.
Yeah, because nobody was expecting it. And he was originally supposed to play for Steele this year. So
he had a good preseason. I mean, and Jim said, I think, a week or two before the season, like, this guy is going to start. And then, as we talked about in, like, three or four different podcasts, like, him and Josh kind of platoon, they both got their experience. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure going into a next season that most fans will want Josh there, and I'm sure.
Yeah, and we talked about it on the pod too, you know, the idea that I think him and Richie Marquez are kind of the same kind of guy, you know. But Josh has to be the guy. And there was a stretch there where Jim had both of them healthy and he went with Ken Tribbett over Josh Yarrow, which I think was the wrong, you know, clearly the wrong decision. But okay, so the Union finish the season on a 9-game winless streak. Yeah.
The last time they won, we were still a small fledgling podcast.
I know. I don't think we did one podcast. I think they won.
Are we the reason? Are we the reason for that?
Have they won in the It's Always Soccer? And
I think
since
we had the name change, I think after our first podcast, they had that big win over New England. Like,
well, the last win that they had was my on the day of my wedding.
Yeah,
and that was August 27th.
Oh, so you getting married is.
Yeah,
it's a real problem.
Union are winless since I've been married, so I think that means that I have to get divorced.
Right? And when you were single, they were just a great franchise, a model franchise. Right?
That's right, they were. So, okay, a number of different ways to like go at this. Why don't we? You want to talk about the press?
Why don't we talk about Wednesday? I wasn't able to make it again, unfortunately. I had a death in the family, but I watched.
Sorry, man.
Thanks, but I watched it. And I guess my takeaway is it was an interesting press conference. There was no big news to come out of it. Just what was your sense of just the mood of the players who were there and then of Ernie and Jim, I guess I'll ask you.
It seemed, you know, it's always goofy when you go down there on that kind of day because the players are training like they would any normal day, but the season's over, you know?
Yeah.
So they're playing short side, they're lifting in the gym, they're doing everything they're doing, but there's nothing... to play for. I don't know why they just don't send them home. You know, they've been there for like it's like a 9-month, 10-month campaign. You know, if you go from January to November, you know, they need all the time off they can get. But anyway,
do you remember Peter Novak used to keep him there like through the MLS Cup, like full practices?
Oh yeah, yeah.
And I remember Danny Califf. He hated it. He was like, "Why are we doing this?"
Especially since they weren't in the playoffs and they were like, you know, that was an extra 2 weeks on that. But I thought it seemed very nonchalant.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense, I guess.
I think it seemed very casual from Ernie Stewart and Jim Curtin. And the tone was much different from what we heard from Ernie the last time out, where you had asked him questions about, like, hey, do you think getting into the playoffs is a good target? And he said, no, why shouldn't we strive for winning MLS Cup? And then when I sat there and listened to them the other day, it seemed like they were fine with the season.
Yeah, it is weird how expectations change. And we talked to the owner, Jay Sugarman, before the final two games, and he was pretty urgent. He's like, we need to win two games. We need to get a home playoff game.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I understand why they're looking back on it now and saying we did pretty well, but this is a step in the right direction for them. But yeah, I guess you would want them to be a little more urgent with how things ended.
Just trying to think off the top of my head, some of the specifics in the quotes, and I did a breakdown. Like, I took all the quotes and just kind of like,
I saw,
you know, analyzed.
Good
it.
Piece.
Thanks. And I think the first thing was that Ernie said, well, you know, if we had won all these games at the end of the year versus in the beginning of the year, like, the point total would have been the same or whatever, you know. And so he's talking.
And
about
Jim had said that a lot too. Which,
yeah, but that's straight up bullshit. It is, because that's not the difference. Yeah, you'd have the same amount of wins and the numbers would be the same and everything, but that's the difference between a team that started strong and a team that collapsed down the stretch. Yeah. You know, if you fail down the stretch, that's, you know, the difference is that you want to improve, you want to get better as the season goes.
Yeah,
you know, so it's not about, hey, they had a bunch of wins in the spring when they were punching above their weight. Teams hadn't really figured themselves out yet. Toronto wasn't, they weren't who they are now. New York City wasn't the same. Columbus wasn't the same. So when those teams adjusted and became better and made key signings and whatnot, Philly went the opposite direction. So I don't buy that at all. I think they completely failed down the stretch and seemed very casual and very nonchalant how they didn't seem to have an idea for why it happened. Yeah.
And the comparison is also an interesting one, because if the Union, instead of ending on a 9-game winless streak, if they started the season on a 9-game winless streak, does Jim Curtin get fired? It changes the whole season. If they start as bad as they finish, I think Curtin probably gets fired. I think they make some changes. So that's another kind of aspect to the whole comparison.
That answer just baffled me. Yeah, I mean, I think Ernie's done a lot of good things here, but it seemed like a complete 180 from this guy who came in as a hard ass and said, no, we want to win, we want to do this. It seemed to me like internal expectations for 2016 were nothing. Yeah. Almost as if they were treating it like Jim Curtin's first year.
Yeah. You know what? It kind of, back in 2013, John Hackworth's first full season in charge, they had a good season. They finished like 3 or 4 points outside the playoffs.
Yeah.
And after the season, Hackworth is basically like, we did as well as we could have. This was a rebuilding season. And then we asked some players, we're like, it was a rebuilding season? Like, we had no idea. Like, Shane Williams, like, we had no idea. And I think sometimes the coaches change their mind about how to look at the season afterwards, or they have it in their mind the whole time and they don't tell us. So I think maybe Jim and Ernie going into the season, they didn't tell us, but the biggest thing was for them to make the playoffs, kind of build this core up, and then on next season they can take a leap, and this is all they really expected. It's the best they could do, perhaps.
You know, it's funny because, you know, I get criticism, and I think we all do, you know, we being the media, of not being harsh enough on Jim, you know, and we like him, we want him to succeed, he's good with us, he's good with the fans, you know, he's cordial, he provides good quotes and stuff like that, he's easy to talk to, but you know, the reality of it is that his body of work does not start in 2016 in Ernie Stewart's first year. It starts at the end of 2014, you know, where you can say, yeah, Nick Sakevich was still here. They had these bad contracts. The players weren't, you know, who he wanted. The roster was not the same. But, you know, you can be evaluated as a coach on what you have and what you do with those players. It's not just like, well, now finally we can start paying attention. Now it counts. I mean, he's been here for 2.5 years. So Jim has to show something more next year. Yeah. I think he would agree with that. You know, I don't think he would sit there and say, you know, think that he's immune to anything. But the fact of the matter is they finished 13th out of 20 MLS teams. Okay. So not even just finishing in the bottom half, they were close to being in the bottom 25%. They were in the bottom 40% of the league. Okay. They got into the playoffs based on some bogus, you know, playoff format. They didn't win a single game in September and October. And so for them to sit up there and act as if it was just very casual and very light, and it was like, well, you know, on to next year. I mean, it just kind of, if I was a hardcore fan, I'd be like, what the hell am I listening to here, you know?
I think some fans are upset, and rightfully so. I think expectations will be raised for the team and for Curtin next year. I mean, the goal this year was to make the playoffs. Maybe the goal next year is to get in that top four and to win a playoff series. So, but
it's got to be, right? It's got to be like 4 or 5 in a playoff win.
Yeah. I think that's got to be the goal. I mean, a lot depends on what happens in the offseason. I guess we can move ahead to that. I mean, in terms of...
Well, let me just reference one more quote from that press conference. There was, I guess, Ernie straight up, you know, you guys played the same formation the entire year. 34 straight games, they put 4-2-3-1, 35 if you count the playoff game. And even more than that, going back to last year in the U.S. Open Cup games and stuff, they played 4-2-3-1, the same shape, same tactics, same ideas for something like 2 straight years. And, you know, Ernie, I'm like, you know, when you guys went in the slump, did it make sense maybe to try to show something different, maybe try to get another striker on the field, maybe just show some tactical flexibility here and there? And he pushed back on it the same way that Jim did, which was just to say, no, we want to double down on what we're doing when things get tough. You know, if we're not playing the way we're playing, we want to go back to the basics of what got us there in the first place, and that's to be a high pressing, active, create numerical advantages, stick to the shape, and don't try to panic and change things. But and there's something that's commendable that they're trying to carve out an identity and stick to it and show some consistency there, compared to the, you know, the Peter Novak years, for example, where everything was different all the time. But you know, the fact that they showed very, very little in terms of flexibility with tactics this year, it was just mind-boggling to me how everything was predictable. Fabian Herbert for CJ Sapong, or CJ out to the wing, or, you know, Ilsenio coming in to play on the right as a sub. I mean, it got very, very predictable and stale towards the end of the year. And I have no doubt that if they just try to tweak things or change things a little bit, they might have had some success somewhere.
Yeah, well, I think coming into the season, one of their main goals, Jim and Ernie, was to kind of find that formation and find the players who really fit into that formation. And it went well at first. The problem is once the players that they found for this formation are injured or gone, like mm-hmm. Vince and Mo, mm-hmm. like you said, you probably have to adjust a bit just to find the other right players for like that new formation. So I understand both sides, but I guess.
Yeah. I mean, they just, you know, when Vince left, for example, they just tried plugging different players into the number eight,
right?
Tried Tranquillo there, tried Bedoya there, instead of saying back in the summer when they still had time to experiment, maybe we try a 4-4-2, or maybe we, you know, give CJ a partner up top, you know, just to help him out a little bit so he's not stranded or whatever. Or, you know, if you can't replace Vince Noguera, then just replace his position.
Yeah.
You don't have to play with a number eight, you know? So I just think that was frustrating. You know, they seem to stick with it to the point of fault, but
I think just to take the optimistic side, I mean, Ernie had a good offseason last year, like we talked about with the draft, with Pontius, with guys like that. If mm-hmm. he has another good offseason now, two straight good off seasons, you start to look ahead. I mean, I think things are looking bright for next season.
Yeah. So, okay. We had a lot of, you want to start with the expansion draft since a lot of listeners were asking about that? Or should we?
Sure.
Are there other off-season
or
were
there other stuff in the press? I mean, like, what caught you by surprise in the presser before we go into questions?
Well, I think Ernie was BSing on Andre. Oh, the
Andre
Kevin
Blake,
Kratz.
Kevin Kratz, yeah.
Well, that's the Kratz thing first. Okay, so we asked.
I saw that. And then Matt had a follow-up, like, Atlanta?
Atlanta? Where did they come? So we just, you know, I asked, Anderson and Matt Jones, did their loans were expiring, are they going back? And Ernie said, yeah, they'll be going back to their clubs. And then we said, hey, anybody else, any other contract stuff that you can talk about right now? We said Taylor Washington, Cole Missimo, and Walter Restrepo, sure. Their options would not be picked up. And Kevin Kratz is going on back to Atlanta
yeah.
on. And we were all just like looking at each other.
The pride
what?
Of Atlanta.
So
he's the anchor of that franchise.
So we called Winkler, who's now the former Union PR guy.
He's probably happy to hear from you.
Yeah, exactly. Who's now the Atlanta PR guy. And we just said, hey, do you guys, is there anything you can clarify on this? And so basically what happened was there was a trade agreement that once the window opens on December 11th, that the Union will trade Kevin Kratz to Atlanta United, which means that he was never here on loan. It seemed like it was just a handshake deal. Atlanta wanted this player. They couldn't do anything with him right now since they don't have a team or training yet. So they probably just said, hey, can he come train with you and, you know, start to get fit and whatnot. And then you'll trade him back to us. And maybe we won't take a guy in the expansion draft, or maybe we'll throw you like 50 grand or something like that. So I think that's one of
those. What was your favorite part of the Kevin Kratz era in Philadelphia?
My favorite part of the Kevin Kratz era was the really good Q&A that we did with him, where he didn't mention anything at all about not actually being a Philadelphia Union player.
Yeah.
So
I wasn't there for that, so I never met Kevin Kratz.
Yeah.
He joins
if Dave's, yeah, if you'd never talked to him and you never really saw him, did the Kevin Kratz
sure.
era?
I'm not sure if he existed.
Yeah,
I have to trust you in this that he was actual.
Hey, you know what though?
Person.
I can't make a judgment on the guy having never seen him play an MLS game, but you know he did play for Braunschweig the year that they were in the Bundesliga. So I don't know. You could do worse. I mean, maybe he'll have a decent season for Atlanta next year.
So the rest of the guys leaving, I guess you're okay with. I mean, do you think some of those guys might have a shot for like Bethlehem next year,
for
like
Steel.
Washington or Missimo or
something? I really don't know what's going on with Steel.
Yeah,
because they
haven't seen those guys play much. So.
I think the goal for Steel, I think what they want to do is they want to kind of fill it out more with like academy kids.
Yeah.
But no, I don't see Missimo or Washington maybe being a part of that. Walter Restrepo, I thought was disappointing because you know he was a guy who was here on 150K. He was
had some speed.
He looked like a
he looked
true,
good in the Open Cup that one time. Yeah,
he looked like a true winger, a guy who you would. Take the ball and beat you to the end line, not like a Chris Pontius kind of winger who will pinch
inside. A
Danny Cruz type winger. That is a good comparison. Yeah. Leo Fernandez and Charlie Davies are out of contract.
I mean, they traded a first round pick for Charlie Davies. I'd try to re-sign him. I mean, I don't know.
I can't imagine they would have done that deal without that. It's like the Eagles and this Alshon Jeffrey crap or whatever. You know, are you going to trade him and then just let him walk? Surely you have to have plan. You know, the second part of that plan already in your head.
So I try to re-sign him. As far as Leo, I mean, he's had chances. I feel like every preseason, people are saying like he's going to be good. He's one of the best players in practice, and he gets chances early in the season. I think it happened this year and also 2 years ago before he's playing the Cosmos, It's just he can't seem to really get his footing as a regular player.
No, and I think MLS. He seems a little hesitant and a little like he needs to be more assertive when he's out there, and that's a disappointing thing because you do see that in practice. But I don't know if it's not going to happen now. It might be time to move on. You know. Who else is on the thing? Well, Andre Blake graduated from Generation
Adidas. Yeah, we have a lot of
questions
on Blake. Do you want to start with those questions on Twitter and then start with Blake, I guess?
I mean, what specifically do people want to know about Andre?
A lot of people do want to know, do you see him as a starter in 2017, says Anthony Oliver. There are a couple other Blake questions in there. So, I mean, I guess I read your piece on Blake that they should sell him. I guess I'd counter that a little bit, that Ernie's saying that they haven't gotten any offers. I just say that the Union and Blake can be kind of picky because he's so good. I think the Union should wait for a very good offer, and I think Blake should only want to go to a top European team at this point. And I just like to see Blake get a one more year in MLS, I think, just because, like you said, early in his career there was so much nonsense going on, and he had one great year and they did pretty well, they made the playoffs. But to see him kind of grow with his team for at least one more season, I think that's important for Blake and for the club.
Yeah. I mean, look, I think it's a win-win no matter what. If you sell Andre Blake and you make some money off of him, then that's a positive. And if not, then you have an all-star quality goalkeeper coming back for next year. I think my thing is you have to look at the contract situation. And most of these Generation Adidas deals, which we don't know anything about, the pattern seems to be that you have a three-year original deal, and then you either get that plus one option or that plus one option. And guys like, I have the notes written in front of me. Did I put them in the trash? I don't know. Darlington Nagby.
Do you want me to go through your trash can?
Should I reach through the trash can right now? Is it down here?
What is in there? Anchovies?
Yeah, there's an IGA receipt. What's going on? Ancho? No, there's an old check. Oh, I found it. Here it is.
This is why we're the best soccer podcast in Philly. We go through trash for you.
What other podcast goes through the trash for you? Okay, so like just for example, Will Bruin did 3+1, and then he re-signed a new deal in 2015. Kellen Rowe did 3+1, signed a new deal in 2016. David Bingham only did 3 years of Generation Adidas and then re-signed in 2014. But again, I don't know if these were just, they agreed to new contracts instead of just going through the option years. Darlington Nagby did 3+1+1. Perry Kitchen did 3+1+1. And then he went to Hearts over in Scotland. So so if Andre did his original three and then they pick up an option for this year, he's on 3+1. I mean, would they still be able to sell him next offseason? Get another year out of him here, and then sell him next offseason. But I don't think his value is going to go up.
Yeah,
at all.
It might not go up, but I mean, the fact that no European teams have apparently contacted Ernie.
I think that's bullshit. I think that's straight up bullshit. Yeah.
You think he just lied? I mean, he seemed like
he was very quick to deny it, wasn't he?
I don't think he'd lie like straight up like that. I mean, maybe they just haven't gotten any good offers.
I don't know. I mean, I was told that they had sold him. I was told that they were ready to sell him last year, but that was under a different, administration or whatever, right? And this was in 2015. I had two sources that said winter 2015, when Rais was still coming into his first full season, he was going to be the starter. Andre then got hurt. I was told that they were going to sell him to a team in Belgium, which I think was Ghent. And then Global Premier Management came out and said that there was interest from Ghent in a trial, but that the Union didn't allow it. So there's something going on there. I don't know if it was actually agreed to, if there was a trial, if there was something else, but there has been interest. So I don't believe Ernie Stewart at all when he says that there hasn't been any phone calls or anything.
Scandal. Well, let me ask you this. If you're Andre Blake, I mean, what leagues would you want to play in? Because I feel like he's in a pretty good situation now here in Philly, and I know his long-term goal is to play in the EPL, which
is possible. Well, let me ask you this as sort of a layer below that. Do you think Andre wants to be here, or does he have loyalty to Philly after the first two seasons that he had here?
I think so. I mean, I think he was probably upset with that, but he always said the right things, and I don't know. I mean, he seems like he likes it here.
Because here's a guy that just to rewind, you know, they traded up from 2-1 to drift him.
Oh, don't bring up Reyes, please.
No. Listen. We're not going to get into all that other BS here. I mean, that's done and dusted, you know.
No, he got screwed here for the first 2 years. Yeah.
And Zach McMath did as well. So Andre played one game in 2014. And he played 2 Open Cup games. And then in 2015, he got injured. But even then, when Andre came back last year, I mean, Jim didn't exactly hand the keys over to him right away. John McCarthy played a lot of games. And not until the very end of the year.
He was hurt twice, wasn't he?
I know he had the knee.
He had 2 knees, in April. So. And then he had a second one just right before the summer, I think. So.
Yeah.
So I think he was recovering from that when they gave the keys to McCarthy.
I'd have to look up the game log again. But even then, he subbed out of the US Open Cup final. That was a tactical thing. But yeah, I mean, he didn't like that game where he saved like had like 12 saves up in New England or
that
something.
Wasn't that the end of the game? It didn't matter anyway.
Yeah. Okay, so if I'm Andre, I'm like, I don't need that. You know, I was jerked around for 2 years here. Who knows what the hell's going on? I think a lower tier Champions League team like Ghent would be perfect for him, or even like France or whatever, you know.
If I'm him, I also look at the future. I mean, he's still for a goalie young. I mean, he could play another 15 years probably. I think building his roots in MLS is not the worst thing. And
I've always said if you can, you know, get money for him that you can flip into a DP striker, then you do it. Because I go back to the idea that in the United States, one of the few positions that we actually produce is goalkeeper. And it's easy to find a Tim Melia or an Evan Bush or a Matt Lampson type or something like that. They're not going to be Andre Blake, but would you rather have a DP striker up top and
a
serviceable goalkeeper, or would you rather have an all-star goalkeeper and CJ running around up top again? You know?
I think their top target is a striker, and that's the next question, I guess, from Christian Kinsley. Any known targets for the Union this offseason? Anybody you think might be worth going after? And he lists the name Terrence Boyd.
Terrence Boyd would be at the top. My very top would be Aaron Johansson.
Yeah, he talked about that last podcast.
I actually have a list of dudes I wrote down here for a future story. I won't like ruin all of it, but
is it in the garbage?
No, this is actually on my actual computer. Wow. So let me bring it back.
I'm going to look at that list and take it for my own article.
Are you going
to? How do you feel about
that? I wrote Aaron Johansson, Fernando Aristeguieta on there. And then these other guys like Charlie Benchop and Rude Boymans and stuff like that. I just kind of crowdsourced Will Bruin. I'd take him up here.
Jack McInerney?
I went through a bunch of like Dutch strikers who are playing in the Dutch league right now and guys that have connections to Ernie and whatever. I don't know. I mean, a lot of these guys, their contract situation's hard to tell. I mean, they're not going to pay a big transfer fee to get any of these guys over here, but they don't need a David Villa or a Sebastian Giovinco. They don't need like a $6 million DP. They don't need $6 million, but they could use a
$1-2 million. I mean.
So why can't you get like a Michael DeLeu from that Chicago signed, or like an Ola Kamara or something like that? You can get quality strikers now in that $500, $600, $700, $800 range. If you're going to pay $1 million for Alejandro Bedoya, then surely you got to be able to spend that amount of money for a DP striker.
So if they do, as we both think they should, get a big-name striker, what do you do with CJ Sapong? Do you kind of have him be the backup slash winger going into next season?
I don't know. I think he's just a backup.
Yeah.
You know, because you're not going to play him on the left. Yeah.
He had a chance to prove himself as a starter. Like, they put so much reliance on him. And that was that. If you look back to last offseason, the two big problems we both thought was lack of depth at striker and kind of a young back line with Tribbett there.
Well, they were two.
And Yarrow. And in the end, those two things ended up being the biggest problems for them. So I'm Googling something.
Yeah.
You can't escape this kind of stuff. Like, you can't go into the season without any depth. And I think that showed itself.
I'm Googling while the podcast is going, so hopefully it doesn't crash here. Okay, looks like it's still going. They signed CJ to a 3-year contract extension at the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
So, and you know, what was he on this year? Like 100-something thousand? I don't even know. So,
he'll be around, but
he ain't going anywhere.
I think he needs help. Yeah. And he can play on the wing. I mean, he's probably better as a target striker.
I think he got really just frustrated being stranded up top there by himself. You know, the disconnect, getting beat up, not getting a lot of calls. If it seems like I'm really hard on CJ, it's just because I understand the situation tactically and what they do with him up there, but at the same time, he's always been so close to hitting that breakout year and getting double digit goals, but he just can never do it. So, all right, what
next question? Who are feasible striker targets we talked about? How about a little on the expansion draft and protecting players list?
Yeah, that list over there.
Yeah, I wrote it down. I think it's pretty.
Yeah, we have. We have two computers going up here at the same time.
I think so. I wrote down a list of 11 guys. I think Alberg, Fabinho.
Well, do the go. Who's the exemptions first?
The exemptions are Herbers, Yarrow
through Generation
through
Adidas,
GA, and Jones and Trusty through Homegrown. Right. So, I think you got to protect Alberg, Fabinho, Ayuk, Bedoya, Blake, Craval, Ilsenio, Edu, Marquez, Pontius, and CJ. So that's 11 right there. Fabinho, Ayuk would be the two question marks. The biggest guys you'd leave unprotected. You don't leave too much considering that Barnett is gone. A few other guys are gone. The unprotected guys would be Charlie Davies, who's out of contract anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Ray Gattis, who's done a lot for this team, but he didn't start. Mm-hmm. And the only starter, I guess, would be Ken Tribbett and Brian Carroll, who are two guys who probably won't get picked.
Well, yeah, I mean, that looks right. It's strange to think that Ayuk is on there because he played for Steel all season. But, yeah, I mean,
yeah.
I'm
not sure who else you put there. I guess you could put Charlie Davies there if you want to re-sign him and you think someone else can get him. So.
Yeah, because they don't have Barnett is gone. I mean, I guess that's what it looks like, you know. Yeah. And maybe they have a handshake deal in place with Atlanta. Nobody knows.
If we're missing someone or not, I just let us know.
No, I think that's right, yeah.
So, I mean, Jim was worried he's going to lose someone. I think, I mean, if you lose Gattis, I mean...
They ruined his career anyway. So, playing a right-footed guy on the left for 3 years and just bouncing and then telling him he got the right-back job and then you draft a franchise right-back. what else is on the Twitter?
Let's see. The 700 level asks, any chance we trade for that Neymar guy? Do you think they can get him for like $400,000 or $500,000?
Is that Enrico asking that? Yeah, I would say the answer is
maybe 600,000.
No, okay. Cleberson might be out there though.
Let's see. Any reaction from Mike Bifonti? Any reaction to the Union being 19 of 20 in average points per season since 2010? My reaction is not that surprised.
No, I mean, I think that's well established.
People ask about Kratz and Blake. Is there enough tactical flexibility with the same shape for MLS? Ernie clearly doesn't want to change it from a John Kersoff.
No, there isn't. I'm so bored with all that.
James Lockerbie, Ernie and Jim covered the soccer side of things in a press conference. Any news on the business side?
Yeah, I think there's movement on the parking lots and stuff like that. There was a secret lawsuit that nobody knew about, right? And didn't DeGeorge get that out of Sugar Man?
Yeah, I'm not sure how secret it was. Yeah, that whole thing with a parking lot, like some other company owns it. And
we all knew that had always been an issue, but there was the lawsuit. I didn't know where they were legally.
I think the union won it, but yeah, I mean, I guess Matt talked to Jay Sugarman a bit about finally doing some more along the Chester waterfront, which would be nice to see, right?
Well, yeah, you know what the thing is too. I think people got to understand that, you know, now that they have the training facility and the fields, and they've infrastructure wise, they're kind of on the same playing field as other teams now. One of the reasons why they were cheap over all these years is because they had to divert money into doing that stuff, you know.
Yeah.
So, what does the piece of the pie look like now? I mean, are they gonna take that extra money and put it into player acquisition, or do they, you know, keep a chunk of it budgeted for off-field kind of things? I don't really know, but you know, the Bedoya thing was,
yeah,
you know, a significant step forward because they never spent that amount of money before. And based on everything that we've ever been told, Jay Sugarman does have money now. He does, I guess, because the economy is better than what it used to be. But it seems like it takes convincing, you know, where if Nick Sakevich can say, hey, we should spend this on Drogba or spend this on Michael Bradley or whatever, Jay Sugarman wasn't really buying it, but Ernie Stewart comes in with a cohesive plan.
Yeah.
Then he'll do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
And the power training complex looks nice.
Power training.
I think those are all the questions. I have one for you. MLS Cup playoff prediction before we sign off.
I'm going to say New York Red Bulls versus Seattle Sounders.
That was what a lot of people picked on MLS website. I actually started Before the playoffs started, I said Toronto over the LA Galaxy.
Galaxy.
I feel like I'm in good shape.
I think it'll come down to, so where are we
the
now?
Red Bulls have the Red Bulls have a little bit of an uphill climb. They fell behind 1-0
They've been really good at home, though, yeah. And Mancosu, I think, is injured. So Red Bulls down 0-1.
Yeah.
Toronto's up 2-0.
All the top seed. All the top seeded teams, they all lost. They're all shut out, I think.
It's such a joke.
Yeah, that's a tough format.
We'll do another podcast in the offseason where we talk about all the generic stuff and you know, how much I hate the playoff format and the length of the season and stuff like that. But so on the other side, then Seattle, Dallas, I feel bad for because Mauro Diaz.
Yeah,
going
that killed
out.
Them.
And then
and Colorado versus the Galaxy. Like Colorado is the higher seed, but everyone's like the Galaxy's pretty much the better team.
Galaxy have been good on the road this year too, but Colorado's been that's the hardest one to pick is that LA Colorado thing. I think Seattle comes out of there though. They're like they made the best midseason signing and they're playing out of their minds right now. And they got everybody healthy now. They got Roman Torres back there.
They got
Nelson
rookie
Valdez
of the year, Jordan Morris.
Scoring, got rookie of the year. Chris Pine, who did you? You know what? I don't vote in those things because nobody asks me to vote. Okay,
they don't ask either of us.
Really?
They ask anybody in Philly?
I don't know, but some of the people
probably
I see vote. I'm not going to call out any specific people, but there are some media members who I find their inclusion to be highly questionable. But anyway, rookie of the year for you?
I think Jordan Morris
is
going
to
win.
I think
he should. I mean, you know, I've been covering Keegan all year. I talked to everyone associated with Keegan. I thought he had a great year, but I mean,
Keegan started stronger than he finished too.
And Jordan Morris had 12 goals. I mean, that's
the Nicholas Lodero signing kind of changed everything because then they had this guy to feed Morris all these balls all the time. So, comeback player of the year, it has to go to Pontius,
right? I think Pontius should win. And Kevin
Molina
of the year,
is the other one.
Do you think Blake's going to win that?
Well, first of all, how the F is Tim Howard
on
there.
I mean,
it's my podcast, so I can say whatever I want.
You don't like that Tim Howard. You just feel bad for Zach McMath.
Like, who's even watching these games? So that's what I'm saying. It's like, who's voting on these things? I mean, that's like the Don Garber vote or something. But
should we wrap up? We're well over 30 minutes. People are getting
MVP,
bored.
Javinko not being on the MVP is a joke, also. But
yeah,
that's about it. We're about 36 minutes, and so we're gonna keep doing this for like I don't know. You want to do like one more
forever?
Or something for the. Oh, there won't be anything to do in December, you know. But
yeah, we can keep going in the off season.
I feel like
just
we should keep going just
because
we didn't. We only did like 7 of these because we started the pod like late in the year, you know. All right, well maybe we'll do one like in 2 weeks or something and look at the playoffs and maybe there'll be some other union news at that point. But until then, thanks for joining us again, everybody. And as always, any suggestions, comments, and or concerns, just let Dave know.
And go vote.
And go vote. For whoever you want to vote for.
Nah, I mean, don't vote for the bad person.
We'll leave it at that. It's always soccer, and it's always politics in Philadelphia. Dave Zeitlin and Kevin Kincaid. Thanks, guys.
Bye.